Good evening. I'm Ali Smulders, and with me is Laurie Harrison, and we are back for another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. This time, we're very fortunate to have Jeff Nichols with us, and I'm sure you will have stories you haven't heard before.
Hello, this is Laurie, and welcome back to our show. Today we will be talking to Jeff, who moved here in the early 1970s, and we're kind of focusing today's show on the village itself, especially for those of us who've gotten here in the last 10 or 15 years, learning how things were different back in the day in the early 70s. Fortunate for us, Ali was also living here at that time, so we'll have not only Jeff's stories, but some stories from Ali too about how things were different. And I guess I would just like to begin, you guys, with hearing from the two of you. If you could tell us in ways that we can kind of visualize over the radio what the village looked like in the early 70s, Jeff, when you came, and what was there that's there today, how it might be a little have been different, and what wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. The image, I think, that needs to be thought of the village at that time was of mostly open space. there are so many features there now that just simply weren't there. There are some things that have been expanded, some things probably that have replaced buildings or features that had been there previously. But mostly it was just the same kind of pasture land, farmland as the rest of the island was. When you came down into the village from Fisherman Bay Road, there were, of course, was the community church was there, but not the fellowship hall. There were no condos. There was no Eden Wild Inn. Is that Eden Wild? Am I mm-hmm. thinking the right
yeah.
thing? And of course the other big house alongside of that was there was nothing there. There was no Windermere real estate building. There was no nursery. There was no building where the Love Dog is. There was no plaza. There was the little house where Vortex is now. I don't remember it ever being occupied during the time that I was here. It was always, and it could be just my faulty memory, but I always remember that being a house, an unoccupied house at that place with the water tower beside it. The market, which had an unpaved parking lot, was approximately a quarter the size that it is now, just a simple sort of salt box shaped building. And then on down to the corner, the building where Isabel's and Media Cafe are now was a real estate office. And in the space where the fudge shop is now was Bob Scott Realty at the time when I came along. And as I remember, there was the Amos Kaufelt had his surveying office in there, and I don't remember there being anything else besides those things. That was an awfully big space for a real estate office. He was kind of banging around in there. It was a desk or two in that whole space. The post office, of course, was in the building across the lot from that at the time.
The little cement building.
Where the paper, cinder block building,
yeah. Where the paper scissors annex was for Christmas. That
right.
little building. Okay.
Correct. All of that, yeah. Whereas now it's two different things. It was just post office at that time.
And none of these other shops were Willow Farm and Colleen features.
Right.
That all of that wasn't there. And I remember when that went in that I thought, oh, it's taking the whole view away.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I remember that that was upsetting to see them go in.
Yeah. It was to us at the market, because we used to be able to look out the window and see the water, look across to the Fisherman Bay to the spit, and that just obscured the total, really shortened up our view.
My.
So you know that I think the mental image that I have maybe has more to do with the feel than it does the visual, because it seemed to me like the village was more of a place that the wind whistled through the grass. I don't so much remember that there wasn't anything there. I remember what was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did it feel like it was named the village. Did it feel like a heartbeat of the community or a gathering place?
Mm.
When I hear you say the wind whistling through the grass and the views of the bay.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that it did, you know, from the time that the market was in the old building down there on the corner, which had been before the original Bay Cafe, in the same spot where Bob Scott was when I moved to the island, and which now is the fudge shop with several things in between. At that time, there was basically it's sort of the trading post, the post office. All you needed was a saloon, and you'd have had everything you need right there.
Mm-hmm.
But the saloons were up the road a ways on Fisherman Bay. Richardson and the Islanddale service station, that every little commercial thing that existed at the time had its own little heartbeat, but and definitely the village was the major commercial development on the island. So and everybody needs to go to the post office. Everybody needs to go to the store. So yeah,
that was it. But it was not really, because the library was not in the old schoolhouse yet.
Mm-hmm.
In the time.
Mm-hmm.
That you're talking about.
Right.
So there was not really a gathering place for people except the commercial places.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the produce department, which has been a gathering place forever.
That's right.
Well, okay, so very visual to me. That's lovely, walking down the street and learning in the early 70s what was here and what was not here. And then to just clarify, Jeff, and then you took us back even further, which would be prior to the 70s, when the grocery store was actually in the spot, which it was called the Lopez Purity Market.
Correct.
And it's in the spot that the fudge factory is now.
Yes.
So what you were saying was, prior to the 70s then, it was just that little nub of commerce, the post office across the street, the grocery store that happened to have a gas pump?
Yes. And, now the post office was in that same building,
at
actually.
At one time, yeah. That is even...
Oh, boy, that's really gone back.
Yeah. So,
prior
to that, and of course, this isn't my own memory, but you can go to the museum and see the pictures that show that the market was actually built out over the water right there, and it burned down twice in that location before they moved it inland just to where that building is now, where the fudge factory
is. Oh, now that's
now.
Interesting that market burned down just like Richardson burned down.
Well, yeah, and I think having things positioned on pilings over the water with ships coming in, apples and cream were going out and logs were going out from that location, supplies were coming in, I believe via Blackball in those days,
And tell us what blackball is for those of us who are new.
Well, that was the passenger service that preceded the Washington State Ferries in the area. Yeah, and I'm not speaking from experience there.
Mary Harris talked about that.
And yeah. I don't know how, I never heard the origins of any of those fires, but it does seem to be that you're particularly vulnerable when you have all that space underneath you, and you know, vessels are coming and going that are probably exchanging fuel and so forth.
Yeah.
So the from the time that the Purity Market, the new store was built, the brick building that exists now, from the time that change happened and the Purity Market moved over and became the Lopez Village Market, then the space then was occupied by a cafe, which was the Bay Cafe, which according to Edna and Phyllis, they were so busy they never even got a sign up. There is no Bay Cafe sign from the period. And they were virtually open around the clock. They opened it. I believe they would accommodate whatever. If there was a crew coming over from San Juan Island that needed to have breakfast at 5 o'clock in the morning, they'd be sure and be there at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they also apparently made a habit of accommodating the after hours business when the bars closed, and people would go down there and they would serve them at 2 o'clock in the morning or 2:30. And that according to them, that cafe was remembered very, very favorably. And Phyllis and Edna were a part of virtually every food service enterprise up to that time. They were Glenn Cushing's mainstay at the galley. They ran the little coffee shop at the Islander, which was a hoppin' little place, especially in the mornings during that era. They had their own cafe. They made homemade pies and things of that nature, which were very work intensive, and it just kept them there virtually every minute. And they told me the reason that they quit was it was too busy.
That was Edna Leidig and Phyllis. What was her last name?
Gilbert.
Gilbert.
Yeah. And they're no longer alive.
Actually, they're both still alive, as far as I know. You know, I do kind of remember maybe hearing that Phyllis had passed on, but if she has it hasn't been very long ago.
Uh-huh. Here on Lopez, they're still?
No. Edna is in an assisted care facility, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I ran into Phyllis at when I was off island. It doesn't seem like that long ago. It definitely was quite a few years ago. And I think she was living in the Linwood area, and I don't really know, didn't follow the thread. Mm-hmm. But those people, they initially they started their cafe, the Bay Cafe, because they felt like they could do a better job than Glenn Cushing, and they didn't feel adequately appreciated by him, so they decided to compete with them. And then later on, Glenn did business in the same place. After Bob Scott went out, it was the Porthole Pub, which was a Glenn Cushing enterprise, and actually Phyllis and Edna got that off the ground for him. And there he did pizza in those days.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And that was actually the site of probably the most successful open mic that has happened on Lopez. A fellow named Deke Shields, who passed away at a young age, was a good guitar player and singer, and he loved to do it. And as far as I know, he was there every week, probably got paid nothing more than a couple of free beers, and made sure that something happened down there, which is what it takes. You need to have something that people, they grab their guitar and go down, they know there's going to be something going on. Mm-hmm. And he was good enough to be able to keep the dead spots going in between and play his guitar and sing a song until somebody else decided to get up there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, well, that's quite a picture of how things were significantly different back in those days.
Yeah, the galley, that was a definite hub also at the time, and as was the Islander, but I remember mostly the coffee shop and the bar from those days. Mm-hmm. The galley was a place where people would just, in the late afternoon, people would go there. They didn't necessarily go there to buy anything. People would bring an armload of wood to throw in the fireplace and sit at the big round table that was always in front of the fireplace. Maybe you'd have a cup of coffee or, maybe you would buy something, but people would just go there outside of whether they intended to do business at the galley.
And the galley was a restaurant.
Yep.
Doing business meant buying a sandwich
or
a burger.
Right, yeah. And the bar would gradually fill up in the afternoon. Definitely things were different that way as far as social mores about drinking, legal constrictions about driving after drinking. And I know that's part of what changed, but also it was just a place that facilitated Lopez neighbors getting together, and that it was a very social sort of place. I feel like those kinds of things are still really important to Lopez, and the places where they take place changes around. But I really feel like the thing that's changed the most is the amount of time people have for it.
Very true. Yeah.
In those days, people would stop by. I can't help but think of VA and Marie would stop by if they were friends of yours and bring a thermos of coffee at any time of day, and we would just sit and visit. And of course, there were things that could have been getting done, and you might even say should have been getting done, but somehow there was room to fit all that together that it seems like has gone away.
Yeah, I find that very noticeable. Even with friends that I've had for a long time who would be much more free to come and do something together and whose days are now filled.
You have to put it in your day planner.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we didn't have day planners then.
Yeah. And if anybody's listening to this off island, they're probably wondering what a day planner is with their, BlackBerry and all that kind of stuff. They're in a whole different realm than we are.
Right.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, can you take us back to your interest in why the heck you started a health food store on Lopez in the early 70s when you and Kim came?
Yeah, well, I had gone to work for Bill Carpenter at the Lopez Village Market. And at the time, the market didn't have a manager, but Rich Schwartz was the person doing virtually everything except cutting and wrapping meat. And of course, it was a much smaller store. Ken Yanasek was there then, preceded me. I worked there actually just short of a year. I believe it was 9 months. And during that period, that 9 month period, I was able to sort of join my predisposition to be interested in natural and specialty food items with my experience in the store, which was that the store didn't have any of that. And Bill didn't intend to have any of that.
You had come from San Francisco, so
yes.
You were already used to...
Yeah, I was used to ready access to pretty much whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
And Bill did not intend to go out of his way to expand the selection that the store had. Of course, it was very limited in space compared to now, but also he was a member of Associated Grocers, and that was the whole idea, to make it easy, one-stop sort of shopping. There was actually one other grocery supplier that actually visited the island and brought us what we thought of as specialty foods then, which are just everyday run-of-the-mill items now. But I asked him, as my idea started to take place, I asked him if we could bring some of these items in that I was constantly being asked for, and he assured me that he had no interest in complicating things. And so when I started drawing pictures, I had, as usual, grandiose plans. I could imagine building a nice little store with a place to live upstairs. I really enjoyed poring over my drawings in the evening. And I eventually realized that Amos had moved out of his surveying office down there, and I started kind of fixating on that as a potential place. And I asked Bill one day if I could have some time with him, and I met him at his house, and I very nervously told him that I was thinking about having this business and that I was concerned because it could be perceived as an attempt to begin to compete with him. Mm-hmm. And I said, but, you know, you have told me that you're not interested in doing this, and it's my theory that if I put this kind of a selection in and combine it with items that are normally in a deli, which is also not on the island, that I might have enough there to have a business. And Bill, in his typical sweet fashion, was much more concerned about me than he was about him. He did not encourage me to do it. I think he thought it was foolish, but he gave me his blessing if that's what I wanted to do. And so that's what I did, and it required basically finishing the room, because as I remember, I think Amos had pegboard on the walls, and it was very dark. And I'm sure that served his purpose for hanging all kinds of things on the wall, but I took that down and put insulation in the little 2x4 walls. It was so lightly built that when you closed the door, the whole place shook.
And you said a space maybe 12 by 20?
I think that's pretty close.
Kind of somewhere into that space where the fudge shop is now.
No, it would be on the end, most westward from that building. It was essentially a little back room, storage room, for the market, okay, for the Purity Market. And I'm sure it was hastily built when they realized that they'd run out of space. And there was access to the basement.
Oh.
Actually, which I'm sure, I haven't seen that basement for a long time, and I'm sure it's still there.
So it's where the Bay Cafe is now. Right there on the water.
Yeah,
is where you were.
The Bay Cafe being everything from the old, from what is now the fudge shop, westward.
Mm-hmm.
But Blossom was just the last little bit of that.
A little slip on the end.
12 feet of that or so, yeah. And so we just recovered the walls and tried to paint and fix things up, and got some old appliances working so we had some refrigeration, which Louis Washburn helped me with, and that was a great experience. And the however, Louis, because he was so fond of telling stories, I think he did slow the process down a little bit from what it might have been. And I remember Kim, who was pregnant with Andy, my wife Kim, who was pregnant with Andy, surveying my progress one day with her hands on her big belly and saying, "You know, Jeff, if this keeps up, what's going to happen? We're going to have a baby at the same time as we open," which ended up being exactly what happened. We opened on April 23rd, 1977, and 2 or 3 hours later, we had to hang a sign on the door and go to town and have a baby. They have the same birthday. Happy birthday, Blossom.
And you were saying that somewhere along the line, because you were kind of in the little backwater there.
Yeah.
Something about some signage that this was actually the old town. How did that
right.
go?
Well, at a later time, San Juan Insurance Center had the little space that would have been between the larger part of the building and my little cubbyhole. And that Doug Cowan ran that office, and I managed to talk him, and it was probably Kerwin at that time, out of half of that space. And we moved the wall over and put a little lunch counter in there, which I immediately dubbed the New Bay Cafe, in honor of the historic Bay Cafe. And about that time, we were getting concerned. I think the Plaza was probably open by that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were getting concerned about the fact that the village was starting to have a nucleus, which was taking people away from our end of it, and that people might not even be aware that we were there. So we had a sign made. Gary Trance, who was doing quite a few signs on the island at the time, and he made a sign which we used to dub our little neck of the woods the Old Town Lopez, and we hung individual slats below that announcing the different businesses that were over there, which at that time I think would have been the New Bay, Blossom, and San Juan Insurance Center. There may have been something else there that time, but I don't remember it. Now, you remember
When did the Enchanted Needle come?
The Enchanted Needle came after we moved out of there.
I see.
Yeah. Okay. But good job on remembering that. And I was just remembering that new wing of buildings that goes, let's say, eastward from the old building. There had been a little separate building right there. And that I'm remembering Carlo Colombo having his barber shop in there.
Right.
But there was obviously things in there before that. This is one of those things, if Kim were here, she would remind me of what it was.
We need more people.
And Allie, you had a story about your daughter Karen working.
Well, and that must have been when Jeff and Kathy Boyce were doing the New Bay Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And our daughter Karen had come back from a trip to Europe, and she was between jobs and she had applied for jobs, but she had time on her hand, and so she said, "I'm going to apply to be a waitress at the New Bay Cafe." So she was accepted, and she said, "I don't like there. Aprons, they don't look very nice. I'm going to make a few aprons." So she got out a sewing machine, and we were living in a very limited space. Actually, it was a shop, but we were living there while we were building the house. So this was in the 80s. This must have been 83, 84 in that time. And so she made two aprons and started to work, but then pretty soon she got an answer from the Anacortes American, and that's where she went, because journalism was her field. So mm-hmm. It was a short-lived time, but the aprons lasted for a long time. I would recognize them later on and think, oh, these were the aprons she made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there was another occupant of the space where I went with Blossom that I left out, and that was a business that was operated by the people that owned the building. And they actually sold, I think it was sort of like a thrift shop. They saw that a lot of people would come to the island and need just odds and ends, like a pot to make soup in or something like that. And there was a business called Trader Horns. And that was Dorothy Lee Horn's parents, I believe, that operated that. That was before my time, but that was the same type of thing where it was just assorted mm-hmm. merchandise,
mm-hmm. right?
Non-perishable type stuff.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There's probably more too.
So you were really the owner operator of two businesses.
Correct.
You had Blossom Natural Foods.
Mm-hmm.
And barely turning around in the same building right behind you, there was the New Bay Cafe.
Right.
And you said you had five stools. There were five stools in the New Bay Cafe.
Right.
And you specialized in serving...
Well, we had... I kept a crock pot. Of course, I had a lot of food at my disposal. and one of those things would be dried beans. And I had a little... two burner hot plate, and I would soak pinto beans overnight and then come in and boil those up in the morning and mash them, and I made a burrito that I kept the beans in a crock pot. And that was the only warm thing that we had to serve. I think we made four or five kinds of cold sandwiches, and I made
and
a
chili. Didn't
smoothie.
You make chili in that crock pot? That's what I remember, but
it could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely had chili by the time we moved into the bigger space,
mm-hmm.
But I couldn't rule it out. That could be true.
Maybe on special days.
I did stock a small amount of fresh produce. I usually would, that didn't require refrigeration.
Oh.
So I would usually have avocados and bananas and potatoes and onions and, of course, organically grown, which was sort of a novelty thing in this area at the time. But as a result, I frequently had bananas that were around too long.
Okay.
So that's how the smoothie came about, is that I'd peel those bananas and break them up into pieces and freeze them. And then that way, with my blender, I could drop a few pieces of those in the blender with some juice and other fruit and make smoothies. And that actually was a pretty big part of what we did.
So what was the community's response to this little natural food store and then the New Bay Cafe?
Curiosity,
yeah.
largely. But actually, I had very scientifically theorized that if I could do about $100 worth of business a day in there, that we could survive, and that I could make the expenses of the business and have enough to live on. And of course, we had this huge rent to overcome. I believe it was $80 a month, and my power bill was about $30 a month. And the very first full day that we were open, we did
after the baby.
After we got back from, we brought Andy back from Anacortes. We did something like $125, which greatly relieved me and seemed like a good sign that indeed we were going to be able to make it. And it did. All costs of living were totally different. Eventually, during that time, we moved out to the middle of the island to what was reputed to be the oldest inhabited house in the island. That was belonged to Hilding and Leona Nelson, and actually very close to the McLeod place, where Mary and
Harris.
Yeah, Mary Harris was talking about. And that place rented for $70 a month, but fairly soon I was my responsibilities there included taking care of Hilding's cattle, which were the wildest bunch of cattle on the island. I don't know how they came to be that way, but if they saw you on the horizon, they started moving the other direction. They were just charging up and down that place constantly. But they needed to be fed in the wintertime, and their source of water were the ponds. And so if we had extended times of freezing, I had to go out and chop the ice off the ponds so the cattle had some place to drink. And once I started taking care of the cattle, my rent dropped to $20 a month. So you can see our expenses were relatively low.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
It would be hard to figure that out in today's dollars.
It would.
Oh,
yeah,
it would, definitely. Yeah. Oh, God. And so did the regulars start coming?
Yeah. And we definitely filled a niche with the cafe for being able to give somebody that had a limited time for lunch a quick lunch. Mm-hmm. Somehow, you know, I guess it does hint at the size of the volume we were doing that seemed like five stools was usually enough, but it turned over pretty fast too. And schedules were different then. It's still a characteristic of Lopez that there aren't a whole lot of people that need to have lunch exactly at noon. It was even less so then. So the lunchtime people came in over a pretty broad time frame. And that was lucky that there was no big rush all at one moment. But I did everything. I turned one direction to sell you a quart of yogurt out of the refrigerator on one side and turn around and make you a sandwich on the other side.
And did you have employees?
Then we did not, no.
Wow. So no. One person could run both operations?
Yep.
Pretty much.
And...
Allie, do you ever remember going in there in those days?
No, I don't. I have a hard time, you know, sorting it out because in the 70s we were here only in the summer. Mm. And not until 82 did we come permanently. But my memories kind of blend and I don't know when what happened. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, by then we would have moved into the much bigger space. Bob Scott... had, I guess that became Washington House? I'm not sure.
No, Washington House was always the big house, the wooden house, but it's now
Bob
Isabel's.
Scott built the plaza and moved over there. That's what happened.
Yeah.
And so then the Glenn had the Porthole Pub. He sold the Porthole Pub and that became the Rub-A-Dub Pub. And that went out of business and then we moved into that space and we made the front half with the bay windows, the cafe, and the back half was Blossom. And that place was much like the old farmhouse I was living in. Drafty, old, uninsulated, single pane windows that had settled out of their frames and with the wind whistling around. It wasn't a cozy place in a Northeaster. But, you know, still people came. They'd just leave their jackets on. And
did you have a wood stove in there? How'd you heat it?
No, there was an electric forced air heater up in the corner, a big old thing. And that was noisy, rattly. during that time, we had moved in there on a shoestring. Of course, the rent now was somewhat more substantial. I think it was $400 a month to rent that. And of course, the power bill was going to be higher because we had a walk-in cooler and cooking appliances, and as well as the refrigeration that we needed for Blossom. So we were starting to use more power, and the whole overhead, now I couldn't do it by myself. And so the whole overhead picture really changed quickly. And although I would have to say we always felt supported, there was definitely a time there where I was fairly desperate for a solution to how to survive, and offered Kathy half the business for, if I remember right, it was $5,000. And Kathy Boyce, who had worked with me during that, pretty much the whole time we had been in the new space, was at least as good at everything in the business as I was, and she was an excellent choice for a partner. And we were fortunately correct that we had gotten to the point where if we could just hang on a bit more, the business would be viable. And we actually had a kind of a bustling little cafe there in pretty short order. And I always remember one day, to my surprise, realizing that we had stolen a good portion of the galley's business, particularly the early morning business. I think the galley was always a bit casual about their exact opening time. As I remember it, you could always, if you walked up to the galley, it was very rare that if you pushed on the door, it wouldn't open. But that didn't necessarily mean there was somebody there to help you. In fact, people would if they wanted a drink, they'd often, in the early part of the day, they'd go behind the bar, pour themselves a drink, and leave the money on the bar. So I think that kind of gave us a little bit of an advantage, because we did open, actually in the beginning, we opened at 6.
Ooh.
And we were under the mistaken impression that people might stop on their way to the ferry landing. That was always one bad business decision, and it seems so obvious. You know, we're all the same. If you're up and out the door early, you're going to go get in line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not going to take chances with getting a breakfast on the way, mm-hmm. maybe a cup of coffee. We gradually changed our opening time. I know we changed to 6:30 and 7 and 7:30, and finally we landed on 8, but we were consistent about that. And I think that was attractive to some of the more early rising people, like Otto Kiergaard and Teddy Ritchie, who liked to play cribbage every morning. And the length of those games was seemed to only be limited by someone's willingness to accept Otto's challenge for another game. And I remember one day in there that it was really busy. It was hand over fist time, and Otto and Teddy and a couple other guys. We're sitting at the first table outside the kitchen door, and the cafe had filled up. There was somebody in every seat, and there were people waiting outside to come in the door. And Teddy and Otto and company had had this table for hours by this point, and either didn't notice or were studiously not noticing that people were waiting for tables. And I remember leaning down to Teddy's ear, and I said, hey, Teddy, right now this table's worth probably $100 an hour to me, and if you want to pay that, you can keep it. And that was the best thing to say. Those guys were out the door so quick. And they completely understood.
Sure.
And so, but they were regulars? How many days a week do you think the crib matches took place there?
Every day that we were open, which was 6. We weren't open on Sunday in those early days. Took one day off a week.
Yeah. I think I told you that. I think I got to play the last game of cribbage with Otto.
Uh-huh.
I was his caregiver, one of mm-hmm. the team of people who were 24-hour caregivers for him in his house. And he and I had played crib a little bit. When I moved to Lopez, I heard he was a crib player, so I keep my board in the car. And so I think we played a couple of games on Holly's porch from time to time. And, of course, he'd just always snocker me. And mm-hmm. that was a big thrill for him and yeah. a big thrill for me. And but he was bedbound at that time. And I, one of these days, I just said, Otto, how about a big breakfast? And for some reason, he said yes. And I got him out of bed and to his dining room table and eggs and ham. And, boy, he just chowed down. This was, I'm going to say, maybe less than a month before he passed. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, since we're about it, you know, how about playing a couple streets? And, you know, he was, you know, fading in and out in those days. But, boy, that cribbage game, he was right on it all the way through.
He's focused on that.
And, of course, he beat me. But not as badly as usual. So, yeah, that was a sweet thing for me to experience. Yeah.
Well, you were saying that there were a lot of regulars who came for coffee, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Who were they?
You know, a fella whose first name was Jerry, he owned the house where the Shamans live mm. now. And I keep wanting to say the wrong last name. I can't think of his name. He was one of our first, actually I believe he was our very first deputy on Lopez, mm. which was a part-time position, basically an on-call position. And, darn it, I wish I could think of his name. He was daily. Wendy Phillips was, if not daily, she was definitely part of a regular cribbage group and breakfast, as was Virginia Palmer.
You were a tiny spot. You couldn't have too many regulars.
Well, I am speaking of the bigger space.
Okay.
I think we had 30 chairs in the original Bay Cafe. Well, the original, of course, was 5 stools, but
right.
the new Bay, when we moved in there, I think we had 30.
So how long did you carry on in that way, Jeff, until you made another change, till you sold the operation?
Probably 5 years, mm-hmm. something like that. I sold the restaurant to a fellow named Pizzuto, who operated, and I wouldn't be surprised if he still operates, a restaurant on Lake Washington
oh.
called Pizzuto's. And he, I never knew him. We did our transaction quite quickly, and it was not a money making deal. It was kind of needing to get out of there, and so it was a small amount of money, and it was a simple little contract. I flew Lake Union Air down to Seattle to meet him at his restaurant, and. Seems to me I got airsick on the way. It was a really bumpy flight. And of course, we moved Blossom out and over into the plaza at that time. And he turned the entire place into a restaurant. And it was nice. It was kind of a fun change of pace for people on Lopez to have something like that. And operated by people that nobody knew, I think the out with the old and in with the new was something very important to them, because while I was busy trying to set up my new digs, Peter Fromm came along and saw them taking the New Bay sign off the front of the building and throwing it to the street. Of course, it's individual letters. Throwing the letters to the street as hard as they could, which they intended then to take down to the beach and burn. And Peter said, whoa, if you guys don't want that sign, I'll take it. And which he did, and it was stored in Pat Cunningham's chicken house for years, and it is the current Bay Cafe sign.
Oh,
thanks to Peter Frum.
Peter!
Yeah, it's, I think, I don't remember exactly what juncture it was. It was probably when Pizzuto sold to the people that initially went back to the Bay Cafe name, but they dropped the new and went back to Bay Cafe name. And Peter went in and said, I have the old sign, would you like to have it? And of course they were delighted. And another aspect of that change that was kind of fun was that I had run a consistent ad in the Shopper at that time that preceded the Weekly. And I bought the smallest little postage stamp size ad that I could buy every week. And it said, it simply gave somebody's name and said, you get a free lunch. Come in for your free lunch.
I remember that, yeah.
And it wasn't an original idea. I have to admit I stole the idea from another place where I saw it being done. But it was a really good idea. And people always wondered, how do you get those names? And I had this stock answer that I had a random name generator. And I never have told the truth. And I'm not going to now either.
And you're not going to
now. You might start it again.
It really got people watching for that ad.
Oh,
you know, of course, they stuck it in wherever they had a teeny little unused spot, so you never knew where you were going to find it.
And so people really read the Shopper.
Yeah, I think it was probably good for the Shopper, too.
Very good for the Shopper.
And I never failed to give the lunch away. It never went unnoticed. And so when the new owners of the Bay Cafe gussied the place up and got back in business, their very first ad said, Jeff Nichols, come on in for our free lunch. It was sweet.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to suggest you reinvent that for the galley, Jeff.
I actually have tried it since.
You have.
And it didn't, like so many things, it didn't work the second time around. Yeah. Huh. Maybe I didn't stick with it long enough. But it just didn't seem to have the appeal. Now that economic times being what they are, it might work better.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow, that's a fun story.
Yeah, which is, you know, definitely the speaking of economic times, that's one of the interesting things in my mind about doing all this reminiscing is you kind of remember these economic lows that have come about in that stretch of time, which is really relatively short. The time when I sold the cafe was a down time.
Do you remember what year that was?
I wish I could. You said that Karin would have worked there.
Oh yeah,
in 82 to 84.
83, 84, yeah.
So I probably sold it in 85 or something like that. I know that if I had thought about this question before, I could have got the answer, but I don't have it on the tip of my tongue. But there had been quite a bit of construction work on the island up into that period, and there was none. There were the people that normally comprised my lunch business weren't there anymore. And it was also the beginning of the time when our population started to benefit from the arrival of much more well-to-do people. And that started to help the natural food store. Kind of brought those preferences with them and the ability to pay maybe a little bit more for things to get it. It was the same thing when I first started in the late 70s, in 77, that there were, you know, the population was very small. I know that the census that was taken in 1970, I think I remember this accurately, was 880 people.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that's correct.
And that, you know, even then, you couldn't figure that all 880 of those people were here all the time.
All the time.
You know, there were still people that...
But compared to now, there were, it was a higher proportion for sure.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there were still some people who lived in Seattle and came here, you know, in the summer and some weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And those like you that were building, getting things started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, most of the vacation houses and weekend getaways were pretty ramshackle little shacks in those days.
Oh.
They weren't big fancy houses.
There's a change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to think of the prices of those days, I remember Margie Rowe would correspond with us, you know, after we bought the land in 71, and she would say, well, there is a house for sale to the right of the galley, $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a new roof.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to, you know, put a bid on that, because it might be a good idea, and Oscar and I said, we have land. What would we buy a house for?
Yeah,
you know,
especially at that outrageous price.
And it needs a new roof. You know? Yeah, and who has 25,000? You know?
Sure.
So we never did, of course.
Yeah, and that would have been before the Whiskey Hill thing.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Would that dock have been there? Do you remember that?
I don't remember it because, see, we were in California when she would write to us
mm-hmm.
and come up with these, you know, possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were not takers. We had no idea about how you could make money in real estate.
On Little Lopez Island,
yeah,
no less.
On Little Lopez Island, no less. No.
Jeff, I think we've got about 5 minutes left. I'd sure like to know how you came to the galley and how you're liking carrying that tradition on.
And in between, there was still the store.
There was the grocery
yeah,
store.
Yeah, I did go, you know, I actually needed some financial help, and I went to back to Bill during the time when I wasn't working at the store to find out if he would be willing and able to help me a little bit. And instead of saying yes or no, he said, have you ever thought of getting a real job?
Really?
And he named off several people that had just kind of been plodding along, doing the same thing for a steady paycheck as a way of attempting to point out to me the wisdom of his advice. And he also told me that if I came back to the store at that time, he would promise me the manager's job.
Oh.
And I knew that that was the best thing that I had been offered. And so I accepted, and that all came true. Rich had by that point officially become the manager, and he stayed around another 5 years, I believe. So that would have been 1984. If that chronology is correct, I became manager in 1989,
mm-hmm.
right at the end of it, and. In any case, that was a really good experience for me, but it came full circle. For my own satisfaction, I needed to find something else, and I was actively looking, and I was in Cy Stevens' office when he took a call. I think it was probably from Ron Chadwick, who was the owner of the galley at the time. And when he hung up the phone, he shook his head and, Jeff, we just got to get the galley sold. And it didn't interest me in the least. I had sworn off being in the restaurant business by that point. In fact, I had promised myself that if I ever was to be in business again, it was going to be a business where there was no inventory needed and no employees needed.
Oh, so,
but,
good luck.
But, yeah, there you go. I went back on the basis that this was an entirely different opportunity. I wasn't going to rent a space and try to earn a living. I was actually going to invest and buy
mm-hmm.
a piece of real estate that seemed to have some potential. And it also had history,
oh, yeah.
had some momentum.
Had the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are at the end of our time. So I guess Allie and I want to thank you so much.
Thank you. That was a quick hour.
Yes, it was.
It went fast, as our hours usually do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I use a line that Bill Carpenter often used. I love to hear the sound of my own voice.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Jeff Nichols. And
thank
so,
you.
Allie, would you like to sign off?
I'd say thank you for listening.
We'll see you next time.